Dan Pulzello. Give me a name. Pat Tillman.
Welcome to Give Me a Name, where a guest presents me, Ben Kirschenbaum, with a dead historical figure they find interesting, and we discuss. Please tell a friend about the podcast. It could be a good friend, or if you're talking to more of an acquaintance and you run out of TV shows to talk about, that's your opening to talk about Give Me a Name.
Do I jump into it?
Jump right in.
So Pat Tillman, NFL player, killed in Afghanistan. That's what the if the NFL had their way.
End of episode.
That would be all that we know about him. And that was all that I knew about him going into reading about him.
So the book that both of us read, Where Men Win Glory by John Krakauer, who you said you went on like a deep dive of Krakauer.
I went on a Krakauer binge, yeah.
And so Into the Wild, I guess, is his most famous? Or
I'd read that a while ago.
And then what was the Everest one?
Into Thin Air. Guy likes going into. He was like, hey, I went into Thin Air, now I'm going into the wild, now I'm going to go to Afghanistan briefly.
It's a good theme, for sure, and it worked well for him.
Yes.
So you got to just
keep going into places.
Got to have that catchphrase for intense nonfiction books.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of the Pat Tillman saga. I liked him more after having read the book.
No, me too.
I think going into it, I was like, oh, what's this NFL Bush era propaganda piece guy going to do? He's a more complex guy than that. He doesn't live very long.
Died at 27.
Yeah.
As you said, in Afghanistan from friendly fire.
Yes.
Which is something that is often omitted and was omitted right when he died for the first month after he died, basically.
Yes.
I mean, people know him because he was an NFL player, played for the Cardinals. He was very good. He was a safety. And he gave up millions of dollars to fight in, well, he was sent to Iraq first, but to fight in Afghanistan because of 9/11.
Yes. And I think he's a good kind of person to jump into, like, because I think his path is the path of America during that time. Like, I think we could probably start, like, from the very beginning.
Yes.
He just comes from a freak athlete family.
Oh, I thought you were going to go to the beginning of Afghanistan.
No.
Which is kind of what
beginning,
Krakauer
the
does.
Beginning of Afghanistan, it's a tribal feudal nation formed in the... No, I have no idea about the history of Afghanistan.
I'm sorry. So, Tillman.
Yeah, just born in a freak athletic family in California and is kind of he's a jock.
Plays baseball first.
Yeah, plays baseball first, goes through a growth spurt, gets real good at football. Carries his team to whatever, you know, like group state championship for California. I'm sure there's like 30 different state champions for California. But single-handedly carries his team to the championship, wins the championship, something like that. Beats the shit out of a guy.
Yes.
In a fight.
So this is kind of the one Krakauer really lionizes the guy throughout the book. Really
correct.
Makes
him
into a hero. The one little blemish on the record, and you know, from Krakauer's perspective, is this incident that happens in high school.
Correct. Where he was with a bunch of friends. They had all been drinking. One of the friends, his best friend, who had like some type of issue, like deformity, is not like a genetic deformity, so he's not able to like really defend himself 100% of the time, but he's still hammered, goes outside, starts shit with people. Pat Tillman, who is a star football player, comes out, chases one of the guys down who was an innocent bystander and beats him very, very badly. I think the cops come over and he immediately turns himself into the cops. Like, kind of like he kind of has like, not idiotic vibes, but like the idiot vibes of he's kind of just like going through life like, not like Forrest Gump, but like the principles are too much. Where he's like, I did a bad thing. I will now atone for the bad thing. Goes over to the guy who he is beaten very badly, goes up to him and says, I'm sorry for the bad thing that I have done.
And when you say beat the shit out of him, I mean, he really, I think it was like thousands of dollars in medical bills.
Yeah, I think like facial reconstruction, like the mom, they pressed charges.
Right.
It was not like a friendly like altercation.
Yeah,
it's like,
we're all good.
Yeah, if the parents are pressing charges, there's a reason to, they're not going to press that if there's no case. But like, so he ends up going to court and gets court ordered, like really kind of like a sweetheart deal.
Yeah, it seems like the judge, he definitely gets punished with like a ton of community service.
Mm-hmm. And I think has to go to a, it seemed like what, like an like outpatient for prison? Like, I think he
could,
it was like,
a pretty intense community service thing. But eventually gets to go to Arizona State, where he's...
Well, he's under-recruited.
Right,
because
he's
just a short guy. I mean, he... So the stats in high school speak for themselves, but Arizona State, like, he ends up going there still with the pedigree that he had. There was only, I think, like, two schools. I think it was Arizona State and then maybe another school. Arizona State, he goes away to college, experiences very extreme homesickness.
Yes.
More than I think is normal for a college athlete. I mean, nowadays with like, you know, everybody, I look at that and I'm kind of like, ah, you wuss. But with, I think it is, and when I, because I was I'm drawn to the Tillman story because I was a college athlete, like, had like, you know, just was real into sports. And when you're in that world, like, if I saw Pat Tillman, like, in my, on my team, who was just like, I'm sad, I miss my parents, I'd be like, you're going to do this for 4 years. Like, you need to get over it. But it seems like he's homesick for, like, the entire time he's at college.
Well, I'm drawn to him because of the homesickness. That was where I... That was where I was reading it. You're reading it, and you're like, this guy's a great athlete, I get him.
Yeah.
I'm reading the homesickness thing, and I'm like, oh my God, me and this Adonis are the exact same person.
I get, I don't know. Maybe if you're getting on a plane for college, like... Maybe,
oh, I wasn't.
Yeah. All right, then it's something I would love to empathize, but people who get homesick, like, get it together. Come on. I am liberal in so many ideas and policies, but homesickness, that one is just like, suck it up. Come on.
You would have beaten the shit out of me in college. This would have been Tillman all over again.
I'm sorry. And I think maybe I just turned 30, so I think my brain, I can feel my brain just starting to shut down towards like open-mindedness on some things.
Where
I'm
sure, like, sure.
No, homesickness is not, like, that's not a diagnosable disease.
You gotta go out. It's not a
For college students. I think everybody else, you know, but like.
I got over it soon after sophomore year. No, freshman year.
Yeah.
But so in any case, so Tillman, always kind of, he was also cut from his baseball team. That's part of what led him to football. There's a lot of these sort of,
and it's not the path of like a, I mean, you talk like now, like, oh, 5-star recruits out of high school, 4-star recruits, like his path to the NFL is, I mean, he just makes them, he gets into a situation and then he makes the most out of the situation, like every time that he gets like from college, like into college and then into the NFL, he maximizes every opportunity. And then you have like all these glowing superlatives from like coaches and players. Like he leads Arizona State to, so like as a defensive player can like change the, you know, the trajectory of games. That's not common. That's like pretty rare, and has like a real good college career. There's also like, I mean, to your point, Krakauer, I think, spends like a lot of time like Tillman. Yes, he's the football jock. He's also like immediately makes friends with like a random like Eastern European tennis player, which is not like, it's nice. I think it is like, it does show you like that there is the jock persona to Tillman, but he, what's really interesting for me is like he writes a ton of letters, writes a lot of journal entries. So like, I think his mindset as he goes through these different chapters is really interesting.
And like a great student, right?
Yeah.
I think it was like magna cum laude or summa cum laude, like off the charts student. And like you said, the journaling thing will go on for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Which is part of why Krakauer had a lot of material for writing the book.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, we'll talk more about him being like kind of an intellectual later on.
Mm-hmm.
But he's definitely, he's not the stereotype.
No, he's not. I mean, he does booze. But he's also like, now when he gets to college, he starts like reading and like debating people. There's like an earnestness about him that people who interact with him say, like, he really wanted to get to know you, like a really hard listener would listen to like everything that you're saying. And it's not, you know, you think like, okay, star athlete at Arizona State, you'd think like a party animal, but there is like already signs like, okay, this guy's like deeper than the average jock. Thank God.
There was one thing where There's a couple things in the Crack Hour book that I feel like are a little underexplained, mm-hmm. but they're like, he read everything. I forgot what the first name was. It was like Descartes or some, you know, someone.
Yeah. Kid.
And he's like, he read everything from Descartes to Hitler. And, do you remember that? And it was like, I was like, yeah, but like academically.
Like, it was like. He was a voracious reader.
I'm not accusing him of anything.
He had strange tastes.
I'm not, beautiful writing.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I disagree with the context.
Oh, yeah.
Just the words flew. But I think that it was just one of those weird things where I was like, clearly he means, reads it as yeah, like, studying.
Yeah, because he has like, there are accounts of him like debating and like, getting, he's really like already as a young guy, and he doesn't make it past young guy, but like already he's kind of forming ideas about life, philosophy, values, like what are values, what is honor, like these are things that pre 9/11 are already on his radar for no reason other than like him, it's kind of his idea of like masculinity, right, is like honorable values, family, like all of the three things. But then there's also like an undercurrent kind of like counterculture-y as well, which we see when he gets to the, so he gets drafted to the Arizona Cardinals. Can't remember what round, like not first round, I don't believe.
He was, oh, seventh round.
Yeah.
Last round. And drafted in 1998. And again, yeah, not expected to be some amazing player, probably like a special teams guy or whatever.
Yeah.
He's now a safety. I think he was originally a linebacker, but he's not that big.
So he's an undersized, yeah, he was played linebacker in college, undersized, goes to the NFL to play a position he has never played before.
And a totally different position. I mean, like, that's a radically different role.
Yeah, it's real. To go from like cornerback to safety, like, okay, there are people who do it. Like, linebacker to safety is, that's a big jump.
Yeah.
And not only does he do it, his rookie year, he gets, I think, like a couple, a little bit of playing time. Then he gets the starting job. I think either his first year or second year, and then becomes like a, there were reports of him, like there were people who were saying like he should be all pro. He never gets voted all pro, but there were like sports reporters who were saying that Pat Tillman, like, you know, second, third year, he's an all pro safety. So to go from like seventh round draft pick to, in the conversation for all pro, in the conversation for Pro Bowler, if he had kept playing, who knows what would happen. Then something, 9/11 happens. Prior to 9/11, this is fucking wild. This gets brushed under the rug. Pat Tillman is offered to play for a different team. I think it might be the Seahawks the first time around. Like, so he's on the Cardinals. And I think it might be the Seahawks. It might be a different team. But they come to Pat Tillman's agent and they say, hey, we would like Pat Tillman to play for us. We will give him many millions of dollars. Pat Tillman says, no, I will stay in Arizona because I like what Arizona is doing for me. The agent says, okay, but now you've expressed interest in staying in Arizona. They're going to give you the league minimum because they know that you want to stay here. And
huge
he says, that's fine. So you're going from like a $3 to $4 million deal. He accepts what, like a couple hundred thousand. Because his idea is, you know, oh, athletes already get paid too much. Like, I want, you know, I'm loyal to the Arizona Cardinals. They gave me a chance. Like, all of these principles and ideas, like, the agent is like, I've never seen anybody do that before or since. That's money on the table.
Yeah, the agent probably not.
The agent was, of course, the agent now, like, posthumously is like saying, like, it was the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. But at the time, he's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Of course.
I am trying to get my nut, and you are just,
people are saying you might be all pro, man.
Yeah.
This is, yeah. I mean, so already you're right. Already you see that idea of sacrifice, I suppose. Or, and again, honor, all these kind of old school values.
Not pragmatic.
No.
Not. It's just like, that's just like interesting.
Yeah.
It's not pragmatic. It's idealist to the point of stupidity, I would say.
Sure. Yeah.
Money good. Money for family good. What else is a job supposed to be?
He was also like, it's a military family.
Mm-hmm.
So that obviously makes sense when he enlists. But also, I feel like those values maybe, there is like a military aspect of it.
Yeah. Sacrifice. But like, who's sacrifice? We're not even, like, this is already a strange person before 9/11, which changes everything for him. Before 9/11, also, in the offseason for the NFL, he runs a marathon.
Right.
He trains for and runs a marathon. that has no applicability to NFL. It doesn't make you better. It probably makes you worse.
Yeah.
It's a type of training that, like, that is not what NFL players need.
Right. You need more sprint, stop yeah. type things. Yeah.
You need to be like
steady 26 miles.
No, he does that one off season. And then I think he does a fucking triathlon in a separate off season.
Also with the money thing, he's not married yet at this point, but he will marry his high school sweetheart. He doesn't have kids, but like he's not solo.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And like the wife like moves to Arizona to be with him in this like house that they're building together. Like, yeah. So I wonder if I ever tried to run that by my wife of like, hey, $3 million, but I gotta be loyal to my team. It's incomprehensible.
I would love that. Yeah. Yeah. I would, yeah, say to my fiance, like, listen, I'm gonna make a tenth of what I could.
Mm-hmm.
But Arizona.
Yeah.
We got, I mean,
wow.
It's like, I think Phoenix where they play.
Yeah. So that's very, very interesting. And then 9/11 happens.
Yes.
So you have this person who, and no spoilers, but two planes crash into the World Trade Center.
Yes.
And if you're finding out about it here, I don't know what type of life you have lived.
I'm not sure. Maybe this is the first time that 9/11 came up. So with all of you, if all you do is listen to Give Me a Name,
yes,
this we might be breaking the news.
Breaking news. 9/11 happens.
Yes.
And the book goes into different, you know, elements of kind of what's going on around Pat Tillman, but there is a point, and 9/11 happens during the NFL season. There is a George Bush packet, video packet that they play, I think, before the national anthem at a game that Pat Tillman is playing in, where I think, you know, Bush says whatever Bush says, like, no harbor for terrorists, God bless you, we need football now, blah, blah, blah. That speech affects him to the point where I think he had been thinking about other things, but now, not only him, this is wild that I didn't know anything about this until I read the book. Pat Tillman quits football. His brother quits professional baseball.
Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah. I don't think Kevin was MLB. I think he might have been like minor league, but they both quit their professional jobs playing sports to join the Army together.
Yeah. I mean, and you, I guess like, I was only 11, obviously, you know, when it happened, so I don't remember it too well.
Mm-hmm.
But right after 9/11, you know, Bush, you know, is, yeah, everyone loves him.
90% approval rating, 80% approval rating. Like,
I was even thinking less the football thing, but the first pitch at the World Series.
Yeah.
Which is.
And he fucking smokes it.
I mean, we won 9/11 that day.
Yeah.
That was the official.
They were watching that in their caves and their compounds, Al Qaeda, and they were like, "What? So he's playing for the team now? Why is he?"
I mean, he should be. That was right down the middle.
Yeah, it was great.
But it's that time, yeah, you know.
Which,
so
if you weren't living through it, you can't comprehend how pro military, pro everything. And this is pre Iraq.
Yes.
So it's just Afghanistan. It's Bush saying, you know, we'll find you, any country that harbors terrorists will find you. And that is the situation that Pat Tillman joins the military during. This was real interesting. Never gives an interview. Never talks to the press about it. There are, obviously, you have like the Bush president, so like the Bush, you know, cabal of like Rumsfeld, Cheney, like they are requesting, like, you know, let's talk to you, like, talk to the press. Like, this could be a recruiting boom.
This is gold.
Yeah. All of these things. Like, oh my, you can't write a better script. And he says, I will never talk to the press about this. And he doesn't. From 9/11 until he dies a couple years later, he doesn't talk to the press about his decision to join the military.
He joins the Rangers?
Yeah.
With his brother, again.
Correct, yeah. And they join basic training first, and this is real interesting because he keeps a diary of it the whole time. And I think if the NFL doesn't want you to read this book and the Army doesn't want you to read this book,
for sure,
because Pat Tillman's ideas about basic training are, God, everybody here sucks.
Yeah, he becomes disillusioned immediately.
Yes, and he writes it like, he's like, and then you, it's the diary entries are him just being like,
Jesus Christ, this organization is terrible, but I still believe in the ideals.
Yes. Yeah,
even if I don't believe in the views of the guy up top. Like, he expresses skepticism of Bush once Bush decides to invade Iraq.
Yes, he thinks Iraq is illegal. I mean, I think illegal is the word to use. America invades Iraq.
And by that point, like, Pat and his brother are already in the army. They've got them for however long. He expresses, like, they get shipped to Iraq first, and I believe it's, goes army basic training, does ranger school. I think they, like, buy a house during ranger school, like, the brother, the wife, and Pat, like, live together. There's this, like, idyllic, like, you know, it seems like everything's going well, and then they go to Iraq first, where he doesn't, is openly expressing to anybody who will kind of listen to him, like, I don't think this is a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think going into Iraq is, like, a good idea.
Yeah, he's clearly anti-Iraq. There's nothing about him being anti-Afghanistan,
no.
I believe. But Krakauer seems to believe that he might have been journaling a little bit about it. And when he dies, the journals are destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible that he had some,
oh, that's really interesting,
some thoughts about Afghanistan.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, and this goes back to him being, you know, sort of the atypical stereotype,
yes,
is that he's very into Noam Chomsky.
Mm-hmm.
And he's reading all sorts of, like, very sophisticated things. He wants to meet Noam Chomsky. Krakauer makes it clear that he might not agree with Noam Chomsky on everything,
mm-hmm,
but, you know, liberal icon.
Yeah, and he gets pretty close to meeting Noam Chomsky.
Yes.
Like, I think they have, like, an email exchange.
Yes, and he's probably going to meet him. Had he survived, he would meet him maybe when he went back to America.
Yeah, so that's, like, and on top of it, I don't know if this needs to get said, Pat Tillman likes to booze, too.
Yeah.
Like,
he loves coffee.
Yeah. He loves drinking coffee. He likes boozing. He loves, like, being around people, like, involving people. And, like he really, really just, like, enjoys being around people and making sure people are having, like, a good time. So he makes friends, like, pretty much everywhere he goes. There are people sing his praises in the military, like, peers and stuff. So Iraq, I don't think they see action. They might see, like, minor action. And then they learn that they are going to Afghanistan.
So Afghanistan is where he does die in 2004, April 22nd, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And was there anything you want to say about Afghanistan before?
I mean, not a great place.
Yeah. It's rough.
From what I've heard. Yeah. But I think there's also kind of like him going to Afghanistan is like, oh, finally we're doing
the thing that actually signed up to do.
I don't agree with Bush. I don't even agree with the army. I don't even agree with many of the people who are, you know, my peers within the army. But through all of that bullshit, now we can finally do the thing that is, like, my principled action that I want to accomplish, which is killing bad guys in Afghanistan.
And the people that are actually responsible for 9/11.
Yes.
The whole impetus for this entire thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, just to give a little bit of context, the Iraq War was sold by the Bush administration. A lot of them, Rumsfeld in particular, I was watching some interviews, did say, or did at least strongly hint, that Saddam Hussein, the leader of Iraq, was linked to Al-Qaeda and was linked to 9/11. He was not.
Mm-hmm. And then that doesn't stick, so they go to WMDs after that. It's a salesman, right? Like, I think Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. There's no proof. Okay, well, I think he has WMD. Like, that's a gross oversimplification, but, like, they are, like...
Yeah, I think WMD is more reasonable to assume, partly because Saddam, in order to be a strong man, never denied that he had WMDs.
Yeah.
Because he wants to look better.
Yeah.
Strong.
And there are, like weapons inspectors, like, who have been to Iraq, who have seen, like, WMD, like, facilities prior to, you know, the run-up to a slow burn is, like, a podcast I listen to, like, the lead-up to the Iraq War. So there are, like, weapons facilities.
Yeah,
in...
and they used chemical weapons against the Kurds and in the Iran War. So, you know, that one is not... They were wrong. So I don't mean, you know, intelligence was wrong. I'm not, you know, defending the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
But that one did seem a little bit more reasonable.
Yeah.
Of course, they didn't find any WMDs eventually.
And we don't know that at the time, but Pat Tillman has already like perceptive enough to be like, this seems fishy from the jump. And he's, I think, like one of the first actions within Iraq is like the actual like get it, like moving troops into Iraq. And I think he's part of one of those actions of like stepping foot into, you know, moving troops into Iraq to start it. It was an invasion. It's insane. Anyway.
Yeah. I know we're getting on a bit. Well, yeah. The thing about tangents, and this is what I want to say,
yeah,
is that the Krakauer book, I do like for the most part. I find mm-hmm. Tillman himself to be a fascinating character.
Yeah.
It goes into a lot of details about, it goes on a lot of tangents.
Yeah.
And that was my one kind of complaint about the book. Not because it doesn't stay focused, but because we'll talk more about how, well, we talked about how Bush made Tillman into a symbol.
Mm-hmm. Without Tillman's consent.
Without Tillman's consent. Yeah. At all.
Yeah.
And that'll happen even more intensely when he dies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he continues to be a symbol. I mean, at this most recent Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
they had a whole thing about him.
Yeah. It was in Arizona. He's in Arizona. Yeah. The,
right. But I think people were complaining that it doesn't, again, doesn't tell the full story.
Yes.
Type thing.
Yeah. So he gets to Afghanistan, and the task that they have at that point is like going village to village on, based on intel to clear each village. It's Afghanistan, but it's also the Pakistani tribal lands, which is kind of like a gray area, semi-autonomous zone. Do Americans have jurisdiction there? And you kind of see the futility of the Afghanistan exercises because it's like, it's not Laos. It's kind of similar to like Laos and Vietnam. It's like you have like a neutral country that they're clearly harboring terrorists. Like, yeah. So what is the interplay between like America going from village to village, trying to root out like the Taliban, or is it Al-Qaeda at that point?
So, right. So Al-Qaeda is the name of the terrorist organization that Bin Laden was the head of.
Mm-hmm.
And the Taliban, who are obviously still around today and ruling Afghanistan after we withdrew.
Yeah.
That was a group of, you know, Islamist government, very, you know, Sharia law, very, very mm-hmm. strict government. So that's the government. And then Al-Qaeda is the terrorist organization that they harbored.
In the Pakistani tribal lands.
Right.
On orders, he doesn't just go solo.
He's just got.
Yeah. I got a hunch.
He's going solo with like five photos.
Yeah. Have you seen this guy? So that is those missions, which is like Army Ranger, like you're sleeping outside. There's not like there. It's a physical stressful situation with Humvees, which is very important to how he dies. So one of the Humvees breaks down. Within this strike team of, I don't know, like 12 people, under 15 people, thereabouts, under 20. I don't know the exact thing, but the on-site commander says, okay, we've got this Humvee that is now broken down. What should we do? Should we go to the town that we were supposed to clear out together? Should we all stick with the Humvee, or should we split? He asks headquarters, should we split up? Headquarters says, yeah, you should split up. And then the on-site commander says, I don't think that's a good idea. And he says it a couple of times, the off-site commander. And it's very clear I have no concept of like general, brigadier, like any of that. But the people back at headquarters say, nah, you got to split up. Split up, tow the Humvee. One group go this way to the town, clear the town. The other team go with the Humvee in a different direction to, you know, fix it at a different base. The two groups split up, which is you should never do, apparently.
Yeah.
When in Afghanistan, never split up. One of the groups ends up having to double back around. And so the location of the two teams is very confusing to the two team members, or like between the two groups. Pat Tillman is in one group. His brother Kevin is in another group. That's wild, too.
Yeah.
There's a cliff. There is an actual ambush. So one of the teams is attacked by Al-Qaeda insurgents. So there is an actual firefight. That team leaves a valley. They turn the corner of a valley and they see a guy who is Afghani, dressed in Afghani military uniform, who is actually like an Afghani military personnel who is on the American side. He's very clearly wearing, I think, like a tiger stripe uniform. Pat Tillman is next to the Afghani with another guy. They've taken cover behind rocks. The group, one of the groups leave, and you can tell in the telling how confusing it is.
Like, sure, yeah, that it's going to be a mess.
Yeah, one of the, so the group that was ambushed, they turn a corner, they see Pat Tillman, they see this Afghani guy, they see another guy behind rocks. Pat Tillman waves to them and says, "Hey guys, like, so cool to see you." And the Afghani, Pat Tillman, and another member, I think maybe even a second, I'm trying to think of how many people were injured, but Pat Tillman is killed, shot in the head from, the coroner says, like, under 20 feet?
Yeah, there was debate about that. I think originally they said super close, and then maybe it could have possibly been based off another gun a little bit further away, but not far.
Yeah, and Pat Tillman and the other guy are screaming, "Hey, this is us, this is us, this is us." The strike team that had just been ambushed, they come around the corner, they're jittery because they've just been in an ambush, and they start shooting on the first people that they see, killing Pat Tillman, killing this Afghani military personnel, injuring another guy, and then Kevin's Humvee shows up on the scene after all of that has occurred. They know immediately that it is friendly fire. The right. the strike team that was fired upon, the strike team that fired upon the strike team, they know that Pat Tillman has been killed by friendly fire.
Yeah, huge accident.
Yeah, terrible accident. They've even got it down to, like, so the coroner, so they send his body away, like, I'm skipping ahead, but the coroner figures out that the bullet that was used to kill Pat Tillman came from a SAW rifle. There was only one guy in the strike team who had a SAW rifle. We know who killed Pat Tillman. Mm-hmm. Even that information is nowhere outside of this book that I've ever seen.
Yes, yeah, same.
Of we know the person who killed Pat Tillman.
Yeah.
And even like the incidences of friendly fire, like friendly fire happens in war. There's a rate that Krakauer talks about, like, I don't know, 10%, however, whatever percentage of casualties in war are friendly fire. Like, the book details a million times worse situation that happened in Iraq where American Air Force bombers bombed American, like, ground forces over and over again throughout the course of the day, followed them around to finish them off because they thought that they were enemies.
It makes sense. I mean, also so many of these, again, I'm far from an expert on military stuff, but, like, a lot of the attacks were done at night. This one was actually done during the day.
Mm-hmm.
At night is actually seemed to be an advantage for the Americans.
Yeah.
And they talked a little bit about that, too. But I'm just making the point that, like, it's you're bound to have these confusing circumstances.
And armies, the point that Krakauer makes, armies throughout history, regardless of ideology, regardless of intelligence, regardless of capability, there will be friendly fire. And that army will always deny it. They will always, like, obfuscate it. They'll try and, you know, because they're always investigating themselves, they will always withhold information, try and change narratives. Like, so what happens to Pat Tillman in death is standard operating procedure for armies across time and countries and race and creed. Like, if there is a friendly fire incident, the people involved in it are going to try and cover it up or deny it.
Totally. And then the thing about, I think that makes this one unique, though, is that once it gets to the government and even higher authorities, you know, the big generals and all that stuff, you've got, well, two things. One is that it's happening right after Abu Ghraib.
Yes, very important.
So the government does not look good right now anyway.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is what we were talking about before, where it's like Tillman is kind of the golden child. Like,
yes,
the ultimate, should, you know, the government sees him as the ultimate symbol of patriotism.
You could not have killed a worse person.
Right.
Via friendly fire. It is absolutely amazing that the best American at that time died in the worst way.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, you can't, it's not even, like, close. So, from the point, they know that Pat Tillman has been killed by friendly fire. Kevin, his brother, did not see the fighting. The fighting only occurs for, like, a couple of minutes. It's over very quickly. They finally realize, oh my god, we've shot the wrong person. They have to body bag him. None of the squad members of either strike team tells Kevin that Pat was killed in friendly fire, even though at least four or five of them, maybe more, know that Pat Tillman was killed with friendly fire. So the cover-up starts pretty much immediately with, like, a dedicated effort of, like, well, we can't tell. We're not going to tell Kevin that somebody that you're traveling with now. They have to finish the, like, the mission after that. They have to go to, like, a different place. So Pat Tillman is killed. He gets, his body is transported. And then a bunch of weird shit starts to happen, like, immediately. He goes to a coroner. One of the reports is that Pat Tillman is killed charging the enemy. Front on. That is a report that makes it to the coroner. The coroner looks at it and says, no, this is friendly fire. What information is being led to me? Also, Pat Tillman's body shows up naked. The army burns his clothes.
And his journals.
And his journals. Immediately. That's something that has never been accounted for, never been explained for. Nobody has any good reason. It is not standard operating procedure. They burn his clothes. They burn his journals on site in Afghanistan. Then they send the body over. So the coroner is already like, raising concerns, like, what is going on? Then Pat Tillman has a very famous, very well-attended, I think even televised funeral. One of the generals within the U.S. Recommends Pat Tillman for a Silver Star, which is the highest honor that you can get. I don't know if it's below Medal of Honor. I don't know if it's, like, it's one of the top ones. The general that recommends Pat Tillman for the Medal of Honor forges signatures of people who were there at that day, attesting to the fact that Pat Tillman was killed charging the enemy on, like, a headlong, foolhardy, very brave, heroic charge.
And it says that, I think, like, even in the official statement of when he gets that award, you know, that it's the official position.
Yes.
For, I mean, briefly, but
yeah, yeah, it gets signed off on. So you have somebody who proposes it, forges the signatures of, I think, two people who give, like, without their knowledge, false statements. The Silver Star gets approved. It gets announced at the funeral by, I think, one of Pat's friends. Kevin still has no idea at this point. Nobody in the family has any idea at this point that it's friendly fire, even though many people within the military know about it and are actively, like, working to cover up that evidence.
Yeah.
The reason that they tell Kevin is that, and that's how the dam starts to break of, like, the information starts to get out, is Kevin, like, after the funeral, goes back for workouts with the team members, some of whom killed his brother. There's no, like, I can't even imagine, like, it, the tragedy of that is what stuck with me, of, like, you have people who are, like, actively not telling Kevin that you're with people who killed your brother. So that tension is finally enough where the higher-ups are like, we have to bring Kevin in and let him know that it was from the fire.
And
at that point,
very, very upset. I
yes.
mean, there are a lot of quotes from Kevin afterwards saying, I lost faith in, you know, it, basically it's a sad day for America.
Yeah.
That all this would happen.
Mm-hmm. And so once that dam breaks, you have additional, it gets all the way up to, like, a congressional testimony. Like, the Tillman family just, they are pit bulls. They keep asking questions. Like, why? How many reports do we need? There's a first report that I think gets, like, shot down there, or finds inconclusive evidence. There's a second report that's generated after the first report. There's a third report. Like, finally, I don't even know, over the course of many years, when does the congressional testimony happen? Like, they get to Capitol Hill, like, 08, 07?
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah, Krakauer's book comes out 2009.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, it's just going on for a while. The truth eventually does come out. But yeah, I mean, this is so right. I mean, the cover-up, I feel like, him as a person, when it comes to some of his views, particularly the fact that he was against the invasion of Iraq, but combined with the cover-up are the two things that are conveniently omitted generally from any sort of memorial that there is for him. And the thing about his personality, I think, is really a tragedy, because it's not painting a picture of him. It's making him into this icon, which he specifically said he didn't want to become.
Yes.
He said, I don't want to become some sort of symbol for, you know, nationalism or whatever.
Yeah. And that's exactly, he might be a stronger, had he survived, you know, he was thinking about, like, he was thinking about playing again. He got offers to play again. Like, I think there was, his agent had figured out a way, like, hey, Pat, if you do a, it's called, like, you know, honorable discharge. It's not honorable discharge. I can't remember the exact like mechanism that his agent had figured out, but like you could walk out of the military.
Yeah, he signed up for 3 years, but yeah. There is a moment in there where he could totally leave.
Yeah.
And I think Krakauer attributes that to, again, kind of that intensity. You got to fulfill the duty. I signed up for 3 years.
Yeah.
I got to finish the job.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, he was only 27 when he died.
Yeah.
Let's say he stays another year. I mean, he's still in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
So he could have easily.
He had interest from the NFL team was the one who propositioned the agent about the way to get out of the army, like, honorably. So, like, he said no to another NFL contract. He said no to two throughout his life. And that's, I think, to your point, Krakauer, like, lionizes Tillman. But I think the lesson kind of is, dude, like, selfishness is necessary. Like, it's a self-preservation and selfishness in some situations is actually a good thing. Because you're thinking about yourself, you're thinking about your family, you're thinking about your wife, you're thinking about, like, so by keeping yourself safe, by living, like, by kind of eating shit and being like, oh, I'll take the money that I don't think I deserve, or it's terrible what's going on over there, but, you know, like, I don't have to think about it. If he just had, like, slightly more of that,
yeah,
then he's not the hero that we talk about, but he might still be alive.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think he just became one of those figures. We talk about the conservative side. The thing that I didn't like about the Krakauer book is I feel like Krakauer does describe him as a person, but that's really only a third of long book.
Mm-hmm.
And a third, whatever. I mean,
yeah. You know,
and he's just on the other side, but he's also turning him into a political puppet,
mm-hmm.
in a sense.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Just someone who he's making, you know, Krakauer's got, hates the Bush administration and mm-hmm. has all sorts of side, you know, he goes into detail about the Bush-Gore election, obviously implying that if Gore won, maybe 9/11 wouldn't have happened. He mm-hmm. talks a lot about how Condoleezza Rice and the Bush administration rejected a lot of, you know, intelligence that made it seem more possible that 9/11 would happen.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, I just feel like he's become one of these figures, almost like a Martin Luther King, who, like, everyone claims for their own type
yeah.
of thing. And it, the person, who the person actually was, gets lost along the way.
I think he's both. And it's also in the hyper-partisan looking glass that we're looking back through it at, you want to assign to him, like, it's a fun idea. Would Pat Tillman have voted for Bush?
Right.
Like, or would Pat Tillman have voted for Trump? I don't know. You know what I mean?
I have,
like,
no idea.
We want yeah. to assign kind of, like, you know, Republican, Democratic, like, patriot, cynic. He was everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, just disrespected completely by the institution that uses his image to this day to recruit, to, you know, like, to keep the image of, like, American military might. Like, they're still using it. It's, yeah, it's pretty wild.
Well, thank you so much for yeah. being back on a second time.
The first one ever, I think. I think I'm the first person.
It's the first one ever. Do not look at the roster
Nobody
of
checked.
Episodes. First episode, one of my favorites, Ulysses S. Grant. Mm-hmm. Went with another military guy.
Yeah.
For the second one.
And then we'll do Lyndon Johnson. Has anybody done Lyndon Johnson?
No yet? One has dared okay. to do Lyndon Johnson.
I'm one book down. Anna well, Bianco is two books down.
And Max Mawachinen, I think.
Is three or four.
I think he's writing the fifth one. That guy's like, yeah.
So there's an arms race. I'll be back. It'll be Lyndon Johnson.
Sounds good,
a 6-hour podcast.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. All right.